Hello, I'm Maurice Powell. Welcome to A Little Like Music, Manx Radio's regular Thursday evening classical music hour. To start this evening's programme, A Fine March by Sousa, the Thunderer, written in 1889. Now, you might think that there's some dramatic story behind this march, but there really isn't. It was named after a Masonic friend of his named Myron M. Parker, who, for some reason, was known as the Thunderer. Maybe he was an eloquent public speaker. Who knows? Sousa, the Thunderer. John Philip Sousa, the Thunderer. Sousa and his famous band came here, of course, to the Isle of Man. I think it was in the late 1880s, I'm not quite sure about that, and caused quite a sensation. The newspapers were full of it and said that he was the best band conductor they'd ever seen on the island. Well, I can believe that. And now some Handel, a very well-known aria from Messiah. This is Every Valley. The reason I'm playing it is because I found a recording of the great English tenor Hedel Nash singing this. It recorded just after the Second World War when, he'd been singing Messiah for probably getting on for 30 years by then. I think he claimed he'd actually performed Messiah over 100 times, and I can well believe it. Between the wars, he was the quintessential English tenor. Perhaps after the war, the voice had lost a little of its bloom. That's only to be expected, I suppose. But nevertheless, very fine indeed. So Hedel Nash, Every Valley, from Handel's Messiah.
Every valley,
The striking voice there, lovely voice there, of Hedel Nash singing Every Valley from Handel's Messiah. Now, we're used to hearing Handel in a rather leaner style these days. The orchestra there sounds to me to have a string section of around, somewhere between 20 and 30 players. And there's certainly some flute and bassoon parts tootling away in the background that Handel certainly didn't write. But no matter. As I say, performance styles have changed. These days we want to hear Messiah performed roughly as perhaps Handel himself might have heard it. And yet, the sort of the big orchestra Messiah that were used to be popular in the 20s and 30s is still worth hearing. It just shows that Handel's music is pretty indestructible. Now, I don't play very much solo piano music, so I'm going to put that right now by playing some Chopin. This is the Ballade No. 2 in F major, and the pianist is Evgeny Kissin. This is the second of four ballads, and they're amongst Schumann's finest piano works. This one is dedicated to Schumann and was composed in 1836, and it's a work of enormous contrasts. The opening is very gentle, almost hypnotic, and then there's a tumultuous outburst in the middle. I'm just wondering whether this was a kind of a musical portrait of Schumann himself, who famously had a kind of a split personality. Well, who knows? Chopin, Ballade No. 2 in F major.
Thank you.
Well, stunning piano playing there, Evgeny Kisin. Chopin Ballade No. 2 in F major. All four ballads are absolutely wonderful. Perhaps the first ballad, the G minor, is the best known. I think musicologists reckon that the fourth ballad is probably Chopin's masterpiece of solo piano writing. They may well be right, but that one is certainly a wonderful, wonderful piece. I hope you enjoyed it. And now to return to Vivaldi. We heard a couple of extracts from Vivaldi's operas last week, just to illustrate, really, that his style in operas is just as interesting as his better-known instrumental style, particularly the wonderful concertos, of which he wrote around 600. It's quite possible that Vivaldi considered himself to be primarily an opera composer who also composed instrumental pieces. We don't really know. He certainly spent his entire life writing operas, and they were staged all over Italy. And in fact, in 1741, he died in Vienna, and he was there attempting to produce what would be his last opera. So obviously operas loomed very large in Vivaldi's career. However, to return to the instrumental works, here is something a little unusual. This is a concerto, or part of a concerto, for 12 instruments, including a solo violin, two horns, timpani, most unusual, two oboes, two further violins, viola, cello, bass and harpsichord. It was probably written around 1716 for a concert in connection with the feast of San Lorenzo, so it would have been a reasonably solemn affair, hence the rather solemn opening. How does Vivaldi come to write for such a wide range of instruments? Well, he had contact with the wonderful wind players from the Dresden court, which inspired him enormously, and so that could be something to do with it. So, the first movement then of Vivaldi's concerto for 12 instruments. Thank you. Vivaldi, the opening movement of his Concerto for 12 solo instruments, strikes me as being a very fine piece, and the opening there with the timpani rather sinister, rather powerful, made me wonder at first whether I was actually listening to Vivaldi or someone like even Telemann or Bach, but no, Vivaldi. A huge range in Vivaldi's music. You never quite know what you're going to get. And very virtuosic. Now, of course, it's well known that Vivaldi wrote a good deal of his music, perhaps even most of his instrumental music, for the girls at the Pietà orphanage where he was a teacher. But the level of virtuosity required in that piece suggests to me that maybe the Dresden players were involved. And I don't know that the girls at the Pietà played the horn. I'll have to check that. I've got a rather interesting book about Vivaldi and his years at the Ospedale della Pietà, so I might be able to get a little bit more information. But anyway, a very attractive and interesting piece. We need something completely different. Waltzing in Vienna, I think, comes to mind. And the music of Robert Stolz. Really, he was in the generation after the Strauss dynasty. This is a waltz of his called Hysteria, and it's played for us by the Salon Orchestra Köln. Now, Stolz, who lived from 1880 to 1975, a very long life, he remembered sitting on Brahms's lap when he was a child, and yet he lived long enough to become a fan of the Beatles. Quite extraordinary. He wrote operettas, of course, loads of dances, 2,000 songs. Good heavens. This particular piece, Hysteria, certainly evokes the atmosphere of a Viennese coffee house at its most elegant. The Waltz, Hysteria, by Robert Stolz.
Thank you.
the very stylish and evocative music of Robert Stolz, the waltz Hysteria, evoking the atmosphere of a Viennese coffee house. And now to, well, not exactly nostalgia, but something rather special, the voice of Kathleen Ferrier in a recording made in 1946. This is from Mendelssohn's Elijah, O Rest in the Lord, perhaps the best-known aria, really, from that wonderful work. All the famous mezzos and contraltos sang this aria, and it was sung here more times than I can count, from the 1880s onwards, by all the great singers that came here. Sadly, of course, Kathleen Ferrier never came here. Nevertheless, hers is a wonderful voice, the kind of voice that Elgar would have been just astounded at, and certainly would have written for. I think it was her kind of voice, a deep, rich contralto, that he had in mind when he was writing The Angel in The Dream of Gerontius. Nevertheless, she did leave a legacy of wonderful recordings, but sadly, of course, died in the early 1950s of cancer, a huge, huge loss to English music making. Nevertheless, Mendelssohn, O Rest in the Lord, sung by Kathleen Ferrier. from Elijah, Mendelssohn's O Rest in the Lord, magnificently sung in a seamless contralto by Kathleen Ferrier, recorded in 1946. Now, Mendelssohn was a hard act to follow. In fact, I was just thinking when I was listening to that, I don't think there's anything as moving as that aria in the whole of English oratorio until Elgar, Dream of Gerontius, The Angel's Farewell, written some 50 years later. Certainly the Mendelssohn's Elijah was an absolute mainstay of the English choral tradition. So, something now completely ridiculous. The music of Robert Farnon, one of the great British light music composers in the post-war generation. This is a piece called Seashore, and it features the piano duettist Ravitz and Landauer, very popular on radio and television in the years after the war. They were, in fact, interned here for a short while, and in 1945, when the summer season that year hardly got going at all, really, they were here giving a concert. This is another interesting recording for another reason. The orchestra is conducted by Angela Morley, who began life as the composer Wally Stott and composed the theme for Hancock's Half Hour. Anyway, Robert Farnon, Seashore, with the piano playing of Ravitz and Landauer. I love the seagulls at the end of that extract there. That was the music of Robert Farlan, Seashore, with the piano duetist Ravitz and Landauer. Now, a little bit of nostalgia here, and I'm afraid you're going to have to indulge me, because I come across this when riffling through the collection. I thought, oh, I must just play that. It's purely for my own sake, so I hope you'll forgive me. I used to hear this song, oh, countless Saturday mornings during, was it Children's Favourites in the 1950s? And it's The Laughing Policeman, sung by Charles Penrose, who actually wrote this old music hall song with his wife. In fact, they composed a number of music hall type songs all about laughing, but this is the only one that was ever popular, recorded in 1926. So, just for me, Charles Penrose, The Laughing Policeman.
I know a fat old policeman, he's always on our street. A fat and jolly red-faced man, he really is a treat. He's too kind for a policeman, he's never known to frown, and everybody says he is the happiest man in town. He laughs upon point duty, he laughs upon his feet, he laughs at everybody when he's walking in the street. He never can stop laughing, he says he's never tried, but once he did arrest a man and laughed until he cried. And then he shut his eyes, he opened his great mouth, it was a wondrous sight. He said, I must arrest you, he didn't know what for, and then he started laughing until he cracked his jaw.
Yes, well, Charles Penrose, The Laughing Policeman. It occurs to me that either this programme will have gained a huge number of new listeners or it will have actually lost most of the existing listeners. Well, life is full of danger. Something a little safer, I think. Let's return to the music of Mozart. We heard a movement from his one of his horn concertos last week. This is the finale of his only surviving bassoon concerto, written in 1774. Mozart apparently wrote five bassoon concertos, but the others have disappeared. Presumably, the manuscripts were retained by the soloists for whom they were written and then disappeared into the mists of time. So I suppose there's always a chance another Mozart bassoon concerto will turn up. However, the one that has survived is a very attractive piece, as I say, written in 1774 while Mozart was engaged at the court in Salzburg. Thank you. A very graceful, charming finale from Mozart's Bassoon Concerto. And that brings us to the end of the programme. We just need something to play us out with, and I think I have the ideal thing. Just before I go, thank you for listening. Please join me again next Thursday at 9. I've absolutely no idea what will be in the programme, but hopefully something to tickle your fancy. So to finish with then, Eric Coates, Covent Garden from his London suite. Goodbye.